Dear Bhante, venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, we are going to start the day's Dhamma talk. May everyone settle down for the Dhamma talk and give the consent with three times Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ කතමේ ද්වේ ධම්මා අභිඤ්ඤය ද්වේ ධාතුයෝ සංකතාච ධාතු අසංකතාච ධාතු තීති Bhante, venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, according to the presentation of Mahasariputta, Venerable Mahasariputta, in this particular discourse known as Dasutra Sutta, now we are stepping into the next aspect, that means the next question, which two things are to be thoroughly learnt. Thoroughly understand. Katame dve dhamma abhinyaya. This is the question and the answer also given by the same Venerable Sariputta. Dve dhatuyo, two elements, the conditioned and the unconditioned. Sankataja dhatu, asankataja dhatu. So this is happening in the almost to the end of the questionnaire. That means we are reaching the culmination or coming to the end, so much so the profundity of the subject. With the all tools at hand, we have to understand the knowledge in two ways or two elements, the knowledge about the conditioned thing and the knowledge about the unconditioned. So, whether our mind is conditioned or unconditioned, if the mind is conditioned, can the mind, the conditioned mind, understand unconditioned? This is the kind of a philosophical, ambiguous question. So, before the Buddha, everyone or every human being limited their understanding to the condition. They thought, even if there is unconditioned, I don't know whether anyone has given that idea, whether there is unconditioned, even they thought it is beyond human capacity. We cannot understand it, so therefore everything was confined to the condition. And so there was a vast knowledge, but it is limited to the condition. And the Buddha to be, or the Bodhisattva, first and foremost he started to learn theoretically about this condition theories and prophecies, understanding. So one has to be really, really skillful in the condition thing, then only he become qualified to just to get the glimpse, at least with respect to this condition. There may be unconditioned, but it is quite against the grain or threatening kind of a question. Hardly anyone ask, because our mind is specifically, this corrupted mind is conditioned. It cannot go beyond this conditionality, therefore the question never occurs to understand the unconditioned. So, with the theoretical understanding, with the deductive knowledge and the inferential knowledge, that is to say, naivipassana in Pali, and once you develop certain amount of skillfulness in contemplation and meditation, then only that clarified mind or the mind which is fairly purified may understand the reciprocal relationship between this conditionality and unconditionality, or conditioned thing and unconditioned thing. So therefore this question itself is very spiritual, as if you are asking, who am I? Can I assimilate the answer for this question, who am I? As far as I am here, it never probe into the non-existence, or to understand who am I, whatever the effort with limit within the egocentric limits. It never go beyond this egocentric kind of understanding, go beyond our conceit. It will never go beyond the desire. So therefore, asking this question, who am I, is a equal kind of a ambiguous question. So anyway, Venerable Sariputta, presenting this Kaye Jnana and Anupade Jnana, the understanding about the cessation and the understanding about the non-recurrence, is giving an opening for this question. Whenever someone to see the cessation part of the phenomena, that is not not mere microscopic understanding or telescopic understanding, but it is through insight knowledge. Whenever someone is geared to see the cessation, that particular person is theoretically quite endowed person, and rationally or deductive knowledge wise, he also radical person. As well as to see the cessation, he must have this radical reflection or against the grain kind of understanding. Then only he can highlight the cessation part of the phenomena. And if someone to see it as the more prevalent part of the phenomena, as the most important part of the phenomena, as the most hidden part of the phenomena, is a kind of a evolution in our human mind, in vipassana jnana, or in this inside knowledge, it is called bhanga jnana. So whenever it is happening, if you are not mature enough, if you are not up to the mark of spirituality, the observing and experiencing and keeping it face to face of this dissolution appear like a threat. So therefore your mind is always overwhelmed with the hate. So therefore when and where someone to see the cessation part, either fear or uncertainty or hate or boredom or entertaining doubts can happen. All of them are just like brothers, and everyone is coming out of hatred. So therefore, whenever you see the cessation part, if you go prepared for that, thinking it is a great achievement, it's a great advancement of our mind, and not let the underlying tendency of the hatred to camouflage the situation, overwhelm the situation, but see this cessation under the light of wisdom, that is a kind of a shifting of a paradigm, or we can say the clear comprehension of the cessation. If you have no clear comprehension, if you have no clear awareness, you may see the cessation, but you will step back. You will think something unauspicious. You will see something, a bad omen, and therefore you will never face it because of this underlying tendency. It is called raga patigahanusaya. So we can say safely the total knowledge on the earth or this worldly knowledge is completely based upon patigahanusaya. Due to the fear only we search. Due to the fear only we do experimenting and we find things. Therefore all the knowledges outside, or that is to say conventional knowledges or worldly knowledges, based on patigha. So therefore, whatever the development, whatever the invention, whatever the productive thing you are making, end results is the head. So understanding that, if someone to give a radical kind of a reflection, whenever you in a meditation to see the cessation, that is to say, see the disappearance of the in-breath, disappearance of the out-breath, or cessation of the rising mode of your abdomen, or cessation of your falling mode of your abdomen, or the cessation of your very mindfulness, or the cessation of your very faith, or the cessation of your very concentration, or the cessation of your already earned wisdom, when and where such a thing happen, whether it is materialistic or non-materialistic, whether you like it or not, each and every phenomena, mentality and physicality, characterized with the beginning, the middle and the end. So whenever you are focused, you are highlighted to the aspect of this cessation, which is like mentality or physicality, like or dislike, if you can observe without the hatred, or without this lethargic feeling, without this monotony, without this entertaining doubts, without any fear, without any uncertainty, it's a kind of a combination in our mind we have never explored into. It's utterly spiritual. And we born with that ability and the feasibility and the potential. Many never explore into that. Many never make use it and up to the point of the death. So therefore they are born as worldly beings, and they live as worldly beings, and they die as worldly beings, because they are not radical enough to understand specifically the cessation part of the phenomena with the wisdom point of view, shifting from hatred to the wisdom. So that is one of the thing happening at the very higher level of vipassana, or that is patipada jnana dasana visuddhi. When you keep on practicing, it is also not happening overnight. It is also not happening by listening to one single talk. You have to listen 1,001 times. You have to rehearse the same thing 1,001 times. Even if it happened once, again due to habitual traits, due to habituation, due to a rut, you again come back to the conditioned thing rather than unconditioned, or you take the hate base rather than the wisdom base. So therefore, even the wisdom based observation happen as a quick enlightenment or like a blink, you have to make more and more conducive situation for that thing to happen again and again, and to live up to that. That is what we call samma ajiva, your livelihood. So if you are not ready to change your livelihood as and when you develop in the insight meditation, or when advancing, when the purification happens, that means your macro climate is not ready yet. So therefore, mind or meditation itself is not strong enough, or your micro climate is not strong enough to dash through, to break through, to go to the other sphere. So you have to be the totality, micro climate, macro climate. Your way of life, that is to say, samma ajiva, your way of speech, samma vacha, and your way of activity, samma kammanta, everything must be geared slowly, slowly, so that the occasional thing, that is to say, seeing the cessation with the wisdom base, has to be fostered, has to be facilitated, has to be nourished, fertilized. So that is the way we associate noble friends. If there are no noble friends right round, you are utterly disqualified. That is, the presence of the noble friends is called the sasana or the dispensation. Now we are lucky enough, we are in the Buddha sasana, it is living. So occasion is there, the potential is there, the possibility is there. So while you are learning theoretically, while you are practicing in a meditative way, contemplating with the mindfulness, you have to have the association with the true man, the noble friend, and don't expect results so quickly because you are in a rut from unknown time since. So therefore, de-learning process, deconditioning process take long, long time. But anyway, you are the first person to understand if there are any such a de-learning is happening. If there are any such deconditioning happening, you are the first person. And if the Buddha to be here, he would have noticed it due to his Parachitta Vijanana Jnana. Otherwise, you are to happen. But if you try to compare it with the majority of the people, utterly you are at the lost. Because the majority of the people are self-indulgence, accumulation, full of conceit, and always think the problem from the egocentric point of view. So you may be advancing. To cite an example, you may be strong enough to see the cessation, but still you may not understand whether you are looking from the fear point of view or hatred point of view or wisdom point of view. So it is only one method available, the trial and error. You have to keep on practice, thinking, don't expect any results, do for the sake of doing, keep on while doing. The one way of verifying is, you feel you are in unknown area. You are in something never experienced before. So therefore you have to be bold enough to go to unknown area and try to familiarize it, try to season it, try to make it your hobby-like. That's the place I see the similarity with this path and the Boy Scout and the Girl Guides. They leave their familiar places, houses, facilities, amenities, and go to the forest and put up a camp and put up a fireplace, and they are preparing themselves to be unknown. They go with the preparedness. That is what the bhikkhu, that is what the monk, that's what the nun is. They are the kind of army the Buddha first and foremost address. Says you must skillful in the all the known areas, all the known facilities and kind of thing. But when and where it is necessary, when and where our mind is going to the unknown, that's from matter to the dark matter or to the dark energy, you must not immediately revert back to the matter and try to establish your regime on the sphere of the matter, that is condition. And you have to understand there are other relative parts of the dark matter, dark energy. Of course, dark energy, dark matter is relative when compared to the matter. So even if you are not bold enough, even if you are not ready enough to go to this antimatter, dark energy part, that means you are so utterly in a rut, utterly in the convention. You will be the king. You will be the achieved person, but you achieved only within 4% of the presence. You are completely strange to the balance 96%. That means you are not ready for the unknown. So therefore, whenever the Venerable Sariputta is inviting someone to utterly or thoroughly learn about the Sankhata Dhatu and the Asankhata Dhatu, that means condition and unconditioned, it's a kind of a challenge to your thinking pattern. It's a quite unconventional. And when you read it in the sutta or the discourses, sprinkled here and there according to the way of presentation of the Buddha. You see, the way the Buddha used the words, conventional terms, the grammar, the language, to communicate to these points to the prepared people, to the mature people, and that is why the literal people never change any letter or anything in the scriptures, because they know how to preserve it, but they don't know how to taste it. Only the meditators, even though they are preserving it or not, they are the only people tasting the suttas, and here and there you find Buddha is communicating through the common language, conventional language, how to see this unconditioned or asankata dhatu, and sometimes it appears like beyond meditation. It appears like the academic achievement or philosophical. And sometimes you feel even academically you achieved, if you can't verify in your sitting, if you can't verify in your mindful walking meditation, if you can't verify it in your day-to-day activities in mindfulness and the meditation, it will never get seconded. It will be still strange. So therefore, when and where that theory knowledge as well as the practical knowledge come and get together, there's some new sparks, a new thing happens. So not by one thing, when it is happening again and again, you understand you have to see through the lines of the suttas. You have to understand it's in own way, and that is what the Venerable Sariputta's invitation is. For example, the Buddha says, when a family with children go to the beach, the children start making a mansion out of sand and different structures with the sand. And whenever they are preparing the sand, or sometimes they may be preparing the playhouses, and they consider this sand is my own creation. It's my sand, and I must put all my input to make it very beautiful, symmetrical, attractive, and they are take full interest to make the sand castle or sand mansion. By accident, if the parents damage it or do something, they will fight against so much so, thinking, you kill my creation, you destroy my creation, it was my mention and you did it, and all the kind of thing. Even any mishap happens, they become very, very arrogant, fighting, because they consider this as their own creation. And therefore, if the parents are going to say, oh, darling, we are going to go back home, please come back, children will never come. They will say, I am on my creation, I am on my production, and therefore you go, I won't come, because they are so absorbed in their sand castles. But whenever they are enough with it, they leave the same castle without much of attachment. And the Buddha says, before leaving, they themselves destroy it. So the exercise, the hint, the gist the Buddha giving is, as far as they have the attachment for this sand castle, they claim this is me, this is me, mine, this is myself, this is my creativity, this is my productivity. I need no any parents, I need no any food, I need no any recreation. I am so attached to my own creation. But when and where they are ready to go, they just become sand. It is no more a castle. It is no more a mansion. They become sand. They kick it and destroy it and go. Exactly the way when we are living in this sensuous world or in the sexual world, whatever this part we selected as me is going to give the boost for our egotistic idea, going to boost our conceit. And we think we accumulated, this is me, this is mine, this is my self. So you make all the plans and all the kind of thing what you have selected as me, and that become you. If someone damage you what you selected as me, it is like damaging you. So then you become frustrated, panic, and all the kind of thing. But at the death, definitely you have to leave them aside. And when you are leaving it, it is definitely going to an unwanted person. And at the deathbed, so much of problem happen only through the portion that you have selected as me, mine, myself. There are a lot of other things in the world, but they never create any problem. They never create any frustration. They never create any disappointment. Whatever you selected as me, mine, and myself, anything happening to this mine, me and myself, appear like hurting you. Not because of the matter. If the matter is the causative factor, all the matter selected or unselected must cause problems. Never. Tannahai jayati soko, tannahai jayati bhayam. Pemato jayati soko, pemato jayati bhayam. Whatever the thing, creating troubles, dissatisfaction, suffering is what you selected as mine. When compared to the unselected part, selected is always minority, always insignificant. But you become so much attached, so much recognized with it. Anything happen to that, appear like damaging your egotistic idea, damaging yours. Conceit, damaging your desire. So therefore, you have to understand whatever you selected out of this cosmic energy or cosmic matter, they are the one creating problems, and you don't think, you don't believe they are impermanent. You don't believe it is leading to suffering. You don't believe it is leading to the unauspicious. You don't believe they didn't have any soul. It become permanent-like, pleasurable-like, auspicious-like, have soul-like because of your desire, because of your conceit, because of your egocentric idea. Imagine if you can look at the very selected thing without desire, without conceit, and without egocentric idea. That is the kind of a radical reflection. Not you are not giving up the matter, but your attitude towards the matter. Your dear and near ones. So this is a spiritual quest. So in order to make your mind armed with, in order to make your mind strong, the Buddha give a kind of a homework or exercise. Take a neutral aspect and look at it. And there you may, even there you take it as an object of meditation, that means kind of a permanent notion. You take the breath as permanent, your primary object, thinking it is more significant and it is recurring more and more, therefore you select it. So there's a kind of a permanent notion is there, yes. But when you keep on observing, you find within one breath, within one in-breath, thousand and small, 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 tiny, tiny in-breaths are there. Within the one out-breath, small, tiny, tiny out-breaths are there. It is not a unit, it's an agglomeration. And if you look into the tiny part, they are also in a flux, flickering nature. They're arising and passing away. But whenever you see the agglomeration, there is an existence. But tiny parts, they are rising and passing away so quickly, so you have to use the reductionism, take the unit and go into pieces. Smaller the piece, more flickering the nature. More it become agglomerated, it appear like continuous, permanent and trustworthy. But therefore, the Buddha used the reductionism and to see, reduce one to one thing as you take it as one unit at the beginning and look into that. More and more you look immediately, diligently, closely, you see it is agglomeration, it is not a one single thing as such, but it's agglomeration. Focus that into the tiny part. More and more you focus there, it is transient nature become prominent. It is not your attribution. It is the perspective, it is the viewpoint. And when and where you see, ultimately where they disintegrate and you find the place it was called as a thing, now you can see more space than the things. So there it is like disappearing. It is like ceases to exist. It's like destruction. And ultimately you can see breath is there. You are not dead. You are not unconscious. You are not sleeping. But you can't perceive. And there your notion, your perception says no breath. Or breath ceases to exist. If the breath is going to cease, you must die. You must have the grave consequence, but it is not happening. Your perception goes below the level so that the breath appears to be ceases to exist. And how much you get frightened, how much you get entertained in doubts, how much you go to the fearfulness, uncertainty, because of your permanent notion, because of your agglomerated identification. Now it has gone to the tiny, tiny things, and the things are, of course, happening. But your mind read it, perceive it as nothing. So when it happens, you would have gone already, but your appreciation is not there. Your clear comprehension is not there. You are not ready to accept. The matter has two facets. One thing is perceivable level, that is unperceivable level. Even at the unperceivable level, the practical aspect is happening. And the day you familiarize yourself, even without the breath, so to say, the continuity is happening. Even there is no object, mindfulness continues. Even there is nothing to focus at, you can feel you are living. You are not dead. You are not unconscious. You are not unmindful, not fainted. So ultimately, slowly, slowly, you go into the have to not have, explainable to unexplainable, with boundary to no boundary. So this is the homework Buddha gives with respect to the matter. Developing in such a way, ultimately you must feel when there is nothing to perceive, but still you feel you are living, still you feel you are awake, still you feel you are conscious, consider this as your real home. Consider this as your second nature. So much so, you have to practice in sitting, you have to practice in walking, you have to practice in the day-to-day activities. So whenever it is happening, your mindset is ready to prepare. With compared to the matter, the antimatter, rupa, arupa, two things are balance and kind of equilibriums, two equilibriums. Our senses only can see the have part, the matter part. But our knowledge can go beyond and understand even the matter is not represented. You understand you are living. You understand you are not unconscious. You understand you are not sleeping. And there also equilibrium happen. So that balancing the matter and rupa and arupa, it considers as the maximum before the time of the Buddha. That's the way the Prince Siddhartha, as an ascetic, went to the Alarakalam and Uddhakarama Putra. They taught him how to develop the rupa jhana and arupa jhana. And whenever they go to the arupa jhana, they say, yes, I went to the arupa jhana, I appreciated it, I can dwell upon that is the maximum. So he went to Alarakalam, he went to the 7th arupa jhana, Uddhakarama Putra, 8th arupa jhana. But Buddha to be has its own due doubts. No, this is not unconditioned. This is conditioned. So therefore I have to go unconditioned. But the teachers were so happy ready to recognize at the batch top and ready to give him the demonstrator's status to and keep in the faculty. But the Buddha-to-be, he told, thank you very much. I am not happy with this condition. I know this is the maximum you can go as far as the conditions are concerned. You are good when compared to other people. And I am also skillful. But I am searching unskillful, the unconditioned. So then only he went there. And he also developed it. And ultimately it happened him to understand, to see arupa with respect to rupa, and see rupa, the matter, with respect to the arupa, they are reciprocal each other. So very nicely, specifically in the Ananja Sappaya Sutta, as well as in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, the Buddha is reducing, bringing the attention, specifically the knowledge, to the very subtle layers, and still he show you the condition. One example the Buddha given is, whenever you manage to see very subtle breath and to go to the sphere where your mind recognizes no breath, no object, no time, no space. At the beginning you have nauseatic feeling naturally or allergic reactions, but later with the help of the faith and with the help of the mindfulness and the help of your precepts, the day you master it, then you can understand with respect to the matter or mindfulness dwelling with respect to the object or aramana or matter, it can dwell in equilibrium, no matter available, and you can be awakened into that area. It is not a dream, it is not a hallucination, it's a equilibrium. You can believe, you can aware, you can enlighten into this non-material sphere. And but the Buddha give a claim, when you are there, you don't know you are in a non-material sphere, because nothing to compare. Only you know once it is disturbed, you are suddenly hear a sound, and then wake up with a shock and say, just before the sound, I have no memory. I have no perception. I was something lost. And I come into being only after a sound, or only after a thought, or only after a pain, or only after something. So therefore, with respect to matter, just you now come back, you can see, before I was not in the matter. So the Buddha says, you have to train in such a way. With respect to the matter, there is the antimatter kind of situation. With respect to the antimatter kind of situation, this has to be trained. Again and again you have to train. When you are training, he claimed one day, you can go into this space, so to say, or this vast area, no object, and no fear, no uncertainty, and you can awaken into that situation. It is not a rational statement, I know. It is not a grammatical statement. And when that happens, your mind is rich enough. Your mind is mature enough. Think about a world without matter. A world without any kind of a desire. A world without any kind of a conceit. A world without any egocentric area, because there is no boundaries. And when and where you train it, to understand, you cannot train it unless otherwise you relatively connected it with the matter. So again you go to the blank space and come back and to the material sphere, and again you go to the blank space and come back. So when the early part of the meditators, they start nodding, they start complete shocks and come back to the meditation, and they don't know whether mindfulness is continuous, whether he is sleeping, or whether he is in a state where there is no matter. So very difficult to verify. So when this question is asked in the early part of your meditation, when the mind go into the slumber like a situation or deep sleep like situation, how to verify whether you are in the sloth and torpor or whether you are in sleep. Upandita Sayadaw, once he is being asked this question, he told, you go to that kind of a deep sleep kind of situation and suddenly you awake. When and where are you awake? If the mind naturally go to your primary object, it's a very clear sign to say that you are not in a sleep, but you are in a sphere. There are no objects. It is a very advanced state of the mind. So therefore, while you are in that space, you can't verify it. Only you can verify once you awake. But even then, once you awake, if you frighten, if you hate the disturbing object, still the mind is not balanced enough because mind is full of hate. So therefore, next day when you go to the meditation, you have to understand, whenever you see the cessation of the matter, a sleep-like thing, a slumber happens, and don't consider it as a negative, or don't consider which is awakening you, giving a shock, is negative. Look at the both in the equipoise mind, in equanimity, then you can understand this is nothing under your control. Everything is happening as a preconceived thing or like its own agenda. You have to get a distance and be a distance observer. Then again the mind goes to the nothingness and again come back to the objects. And when this is happening, more you develop in the equipoise point, more you develop with that balanced mind, the shock reduces. Ultimately, they become reciprocal each other. Often, mind goes one to the other. The classic example can give is, when and where you manage to observe the cessation part of the out-breath or cessation part of the in-breath, you see it is a challenge. It's a gray area. Unless otherwise you go prepared, you slip this, you over observe it. So therefore, one day you have to be very full of faith, full of precepts on the morality, full of mindfulness, and observe it. And when occasionally you can see the out-breath ceases to exist and then only the in-breath starts. In-breath ceases to exist and then only the out-breath start. The places they are the in-between, unperceivable. But so far you would have taken 10 million breaths. One person told, if you are to live 100 years, maybe 13 million breaths you have to take. And you have lived, if you are believing the birth and rebirth, so much of lives. But after observing so much of billions of breaths, you have never seen the gap. Now you are due to your mindfulness, due to your morality, moral restraint, and your faith, you focus. And the day you see, you understand it is already there. It's a matter of observation. You are not observing it. It is also because you have a phobia. You have a negative feeling for that. You always see the peaks, jumping from one to the other. You never see the valley, and more you to see. You see it's a kind of a specific focusing, one-pointedness, observation. And later you find you can't skip it without seeing. So much so it becomes day-to-day. And you find it's a must for the breath to happen. That is the part, a momentary death. You're going through the death and then again reborn, and again going to the death and again reborn. So generally we hate breath, we happy with the birth, and that is why we see the positive side, which is perceivable through your senses. But through wisdom, through the one-pointedness, through mindfulness direction, you can see it. Now you can at least, if you are a skillful yogi, you may understand between the in-breath and out-breath, there's a gap. And out-breath and in-breath, rising and falling, falling and rising. And imagine each and every in-breath is 1001 little in-breaths. While you are observing the in-breath, so much of episodes, so much of gaps. The more you observe, you may find more gaps than the in-breath nature. Gaps are increasing. So this is the place you feel nauseity. You feel the ambiguity between have and have not. And your mind is, or your senses faculties see have. And the wisdom is inviting you to see have not. So there is utter contradiction. That is to say, left hemisphere of your brain and the right hemisphere of the brain, they are ever fighting. They never talk to each other. There is no communication. This is the only point where two lobes communicate into the corpus callosum and understand in the phenomena there are some revealed part. There are some part never revealed. Only the Buddha asking for the beginner, asking for the developing yogi to look into that. And while looking, don't think you are a special being. You have a special way of looking, one-pointedness. And when you see, for the first time, the marriage between the left hemisphere of the brain and the right hemisphere happens. This is the point you lose your maleness, femaleness. You lose your all attribution, then you become a human because the both of them are going to work hand in hand. And then onward, of course, you become very radical. You become very unconventional. And then you can understand each and everything. We see it as an agglomeration because of our craviness, our desire, because of our conceit. Because of our egocentric idea, then we call, I am a Sinhalese Buddhist. I am a Buddhist, therefore I have to protect and secure Buddhism. I am a Sinhalese born in Sri Lanka, so therefore I am fighting for the Sinhalese Buddhism. Moment you recognize and fighting for Sinhalese Buddhism, sorry to say, you lose your human nature. You are no more a human. You are fighting for part and partial. So when the both of them are going to work, you understand. Each and everyone fight for their rights. Because you have not seen the picture properly. If you are to see the picture, you are already endowed. You are born with the enlightenment. But you hate it. You only see the enlightenment in the materialistic part. Or in the luxurious life, or in this consumerization life. But without knowing this gap, the Buddha says your balance, knowledge is not balanced. And with respect to the have, not have is existing. With respect to the not have, having is existing. That is how the conditioned thing and unconditioned thing has to work reciprocally with our blind mind, which is attractive only to the have, we are paralyzed. Knowledge-wise paralyzed, ethically paralyzed. So when and where you meditate only, you know the ethical values, why it is necessary, and how it is boosting your balance growth. And then the mind is ready to, one-pointedness is the tool to see. And then the wisdom is to appreciate it. Or verify it. So that is why the very question the Buddha, the Venerable Sariputta is asking, what are the two things most greatly helpful, mindfulness and the clear comprehension? You have to be mindful and you clearly understand I am mindful. Appreciation of the same. So even if you are mindful, if you do not know that you are mindful, useless. So therefore, being mindfulness is meditation and appreciation is your wisdom. That is clear comprehension. The present day, what is happening is many rich people, they earn so much of money. but no time to appreciate and spend the money. So money become burden. They are sleeping upon the mattresses of money, because if put into the bank, it will go to the taxing. So they can't live happily, they can sleep happily, because they have no time to consume it. Likewise, we are born with this, all the qualities, and we are searching new, projecting further to the future, and never live in here and now. So therefore, even you are mindful, you don't know. Why I am telling like that is, that we sit here for 8-9 days, and anyone come and ask why you are doing, and all the kinds of leaving aside the house and the dear and near one, living here and rough out, it's all the kind of thing, you will say to be mindful. But the Buddha says, you are already born mindful. Buddha says, satadipateya sabbe dhamma, whatever the thing happened, mindfulness is there. Only thing is, you are not appreciating. The moment you try to appreciate, as a instructions given, and you find something wrong. But the Buddha, with the omniscient knowledge in the Samiti Sutta and the Kimmulaka Sutta, the Buddha says, Sabbe Dhamma, anything happen the light, under the light of mindfulness. But you don't know. You don't appreciate. So Venerable Jnanaponika, writing The Power of Mindfulness, he tried to pinpoint this. Whenever you try to give the mindfulness as your foremost thing, your lifestyle is completely different. Anything you take instead mindfulness, if you take the faith or energy or concentration or wisdom, they are paralyzed. They are crooked. They are misdirecting you. They are eccentric. Mindfulness is not a very attractive one, he says. Mindfulness is a very boring, very monotonous. Full of doubts and full of uncertainties, but never betray you. And it is leading straightforward, not like the faith and energy. They are not energy, faith, kind of the very attractive personalities. But the mindfulness with the inner qualities, the day you appreciate it, you will appreciate the humanness. Human beings are the only beings endowed with the mindfulness. They are the bloody people, never appreciate mindfulness. So that is the point. I have to use this, all the bad words that you are using in the Northern American language. I'm sorry. So I am not using it. I am telling you, you have to understand, you are a fool. You are born with these all the qualities. When the Buddha is pinpointing, why do you feel pricky? Buddha has to prick you. Otherwise, you will fall asleep. You don't know. So it is not to hurt you or this thing, but someone has to come and wake you. So I was so happy to read this part of mindfulness. The way, Venerable Jnanaponika, in the first 2 pages, just read it. I bought few copies if you need. Read it and see. Whenever you give the whole trust upon the mindfulness, that is to say, Satipatthana Bhavana, you see, your mind is choicelessly aware, the have and have not, condition and unconditioned. Then only you can see your phobia, your fear, your allergic reaction to unconditioned. So therefore, naturally, you pull into the condition level and you will be a king and you will be a one-upmanship and fighting and all the kind of thing in the conditioned world. At last, at the deathbed, you are the one to suffer. So when the mindfulness comes into being, you understand the difference between the have and have, not conditioned and unconditioned, but the facilitating through the meditation, through this patipada, is to give more and more to the unconditioned. Not that unconditioned is better than conditioned. They are reciprocal. They are each other. But that is the one we have the black hole. We have the negative feeling. We have the fear. We have the allergic reaction. And when and where you try to give a fair chance for this unconditioned, huge amount of immunity. Huge amount of contentment, huge amount of peace, huge amount of self-confidence going to start. And the Buddha says, I can't give it to you. I can only show the path. And once you develop, you can't give it to your son or daughter. You have to teach them the path. And the single tool, maybe I am too much to reduce everything into the single tool. That's the mindfulness. So earlier I had my fair doubt. Is it fair enough to reduce the whole tools into this mindfulness? And the Sutra Sutta, very first question, Venerable Sariputta is asking, what is the single factor most grateful, most helpful? He says, diligence. The whole teaching of the Buddha, we can reduce the diligence. That is why the last word of the Buddha, be diligent. All the conditional thing has passing away nature. Sabbe sankhara anicca, vaidamma sankhara appamadena sampadeta. And that is split into two in this series, group of twos. The diligence divided into two, mindfulness and the clear comprehension. So therefore, what you have to do is mindfulness, and the endowment that you have to expect when you become mindfulness is the clear comprehension. I am repeating, what you have to do, what you have to earn, what you have to facilitate, what you have to achieve is mindfulness. Whenever the mindfulness is achieved, the clear comprehension is an endowment or gift. Can happen, may or may not. But without mindfulness, no clear comprehension. So this is what the kaya jnana, anupade jnana, you have to see the cessation of it. And the cessation is recognized as the nirodha, disappearance, tapering off, bleaching off. So all these things in our common language use as negative. So I have to use the negative in the Northern American language to tell the truth. Otherwise, you will be very happy with these language words. You will be punning and you will be writing poems and pay diagrams and ultimately it is useless. But the opposite, you have to pun, you have to use the word, and Buddha is the master using the different nuances of the meaning, and ultimately it's pricky. And you don't feel like it, it appears like nauseatic, it feels like allergic kind of thing, but that is the way you open the door to see the cessation. And see, it is not, don't expect again to arise it. If it is again, you are interesting it. Anupade Dhamma, gone forever. Like as when you see it, you are preparing your mind for the unconditioned, and many, even the Buddhist, expect that after the death. That is yet another taboo. The Buddha says, unconditioned is not beyond the death. As far as you are thorough on the conditions to say they are impermanent, they are inauspicious, they are suffering, they are non-self, then the mindset is prepared for the unconditioned. So therefore, whenever the conditioned things are propping up, thoroughly observe it, immediately observe it, be close, and then see it's a negative nature, then it is an invitation for you to see the unconditioned. Unconditioned per se, you can't see it, but this is the doorway. And when that is happening, your choiceless awareness, your evenly suspended attention is a must. And that is also exemplified, it's also been personification done by your true friend. Through your noble friend. They are giving certain amount of examples not to shaken by the vicissitudes of the world, whether you are get gain or lost, fame or ill fame, pain or pleasure. Whatever may be, don't take a stand and try to be equanimous. So, Venerable Katakurandi Jnanananda Thero, he used to say, when you are playing with the seesaw, the biggest thrill happens the furthest end. That's the place you go and start moving, and that is the nature. But the Buddha says, avoid the both the ends and understand the middle. Imagine when you are sitting on the middle of the seesaw, it has the same wavelength, but with the least amount of action. The same wavelength is there, but the least amount of action. So that is, being there, you can see the whole seesaw action, and you see people are very happy with the extremes. They get the bigger shock in the extreme, but still when you are there, you understand as far as you are in the further extreme, you never see the other side. You only see one side. If you are to see the, both the sides, you have to come to the center. When you come to the center, you understand your whole knowledge is partial. And very, very nicely the Buddha mentioned in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, that very center, the equanimous point, is resting upon your ignorance. The pivot is your ignorance. Upon that only the seesaw happened. So if you wish to understand the magnanimity of your ignorance, you have to be equanimous, you have to come to the center and develop the choiceless awareness. Then you see, I know only very little pebbles with respect to the unknown. Verily, Sir Isaac Newton mentioned, I am a child playing in the seashore, playing with the pebbles. I don't know the mighty sea and the earth behind. I am just playing at the seashore. But the Buddha mentioned, with the world of the Deva, Brahma, Yakka, kings and nuns and monks and people, I know everything. He proclaimed, after the knowing, that is why we call omniscient, then he says, come to the center, then you understand how much you are ignorant. That fear is there. That is why you cannot be equanimous. Whenever you try to be equanimous, whenever you to understand the choiceless awareness, whenever you to understand the evenly suspended attention, you have to understand how ignorant I am. What a huge amount of ignorance. So therefore, more and more you come to the center without giving chances for the vicissitudes, you are bound to see your ignorance. And beautifully, the Buddha says, the ignorance is resting upon the knowledge. The amount of ignorance you know about you, that is what you call the knowledge. If you are searching the knowledge outside, that is what we call the wrong search. You have to understand, you have to be equanimous, ready to see both the sides of the seashore, gain, lost, pain, pleasure, good name, bad name, popular, unpopular. Then you understand how much you are seeking the pleasure principle, only part and partial. And you think that is the success. You never get it, even the death, by death. And then you understand the ignorance. That ignorance is resting upon the knowledge. You have to understand the magnanimity of your ignorance. That is why we are sitting in front of the Buddha. That's why we are learning Dhamma. That's why we are respecting Sangha. Because they are jewels. They are full of. So you have to go and sacrifice yourself humbly, with faith, with moral restraint, and with mindfulness. And when you go there, you understand, more and more you go closer and closer to the object, more and more you see nothingness, unsubstantial thing. And if you think that nothingness is because of your mindfulness, or nothingness is because of your concentration, that is what you call the ignorance. Nothingness is the nature. Due to the ignorance, due to the mindfulness only, you see thing as it is. Due to the concentration and the wisdom, and it is an equilibrium. It is really, you can't, it's a stable state. And to be with it without a choice, with the gain, fame and all the kind of thing, it is the spiritual advancement. When it is happening, you can understand so far what are the things, what are the time we spend for what? Are we spending time to understand who am I? Or to understand here and now? or to understand things as they are, or we wish to see what you like. We wish to gain what you like. And the very question is, does that your liking lead to your well-being? Does that your desire leading to your well-being? Never. If it is so, how can addiction can lead people to death? More and more get addicted, they are more and more burning the candle from the both the ends. So therefore, see, both parties in the equal point, equal way, it is not an easy task, definitely. If it is specifically, if you do not have the faith, if you do not have the moral restraint, if you do not have enough mindfulness, it is not. Even with the faith, even with the moral restraint, even with the mindful, this is always electric. So always impromptu. Some may get, some not. It is not a curse. It is not a discrimination. It is such a profound. So therefore you have to always be a candidate, be ready, facilitate, and give conducive condition as much as possible. Do it incessantly without expecting results. That's a kind of preparing for this unconditioned. To end the talk, I will cite an example to what the Buddha mentioned. I'm little changing it. I don't know whether you all have seen the monks are going on alms rounds. They take the empty bowl and go house to house. And if it is a Buddhist places, the people sometimes be ready to serve, specifically in Burma, Thailand, and some parts of Sri Lanka also. Householders come and give something already cooked food into your bowl. So when you go there, the highest merits and the highest skillfulness says, don't skip houses, go house by house. So when you go and stand in the house, in front of the house, that particular person come and give a very delicious desired food, will say, and then you feel, okay, thank you, supatveva, you bless him. And the next householder come and say, I'm sorry, today nothing, please go. See, you have to bless the equally same for the same person, whether he give or not. So the Buddha says, alattang yadidang sadhu nalattang sundaramiti. If you get something, good. If it is not getting, still beautiful, because you are on arms rounds. You have nothing to find case against that particular person. He gave, you did not give. Why I have to go to the court and I will go to petition to the police? No nonsense. If you get, good. If you do not get, still beautiful. Ubaye neva sotadi. He is unshaken by the gain and the lost. Rukkangwe pativattadi. As if you go to a tree expecting delicious fruits. But if you go in the off-season, you won't get it. Can you find fault with the tree? No. If it is have, you get good. If it is not there, thank you very much, you go back. This is what the meditative life. That is the prayer. You invite unconditionally. It is irrational. Yes. But it's equilibrium. It's one thing you can achieve. Of course, you have not achieved so far. That is why we are roaming in this samsaric perpetuation. The moment you understand, you have no liking for what you call yours, and you have no disliking for you are not yours. And matter is, material is not the crucial thing. Your attitude to the material. Before the death, if you can live with the material on the utility value, not for the luxury, not for the egotistic, not for the conceit, then that is the way, the highest, the biggest, the most efficient way of living. Not the luxury, not the consumerization, using for the utility value. So therefore, more and more you go to the utility value and live in the society, you are never contributing to the global warming. You are never contributing to the pollution. You are not contributing to the mental pollution. You are not exploiting others. So this is the way the Buddha, being a prince, came down from the palace and went on these alms rounds and gave this teaching. When Sariputta is extracting from there, he says it is very hard to learn, but anyway, conditioning, condition means desire, conceit, and the egocentric. And unconditioned, so you have to understand both them in the same viewpoint, then only before even the death, in this very life, you can get the liberation from the condition and unconditioned, and that is never been properly interpreted in the commentaries. But lucky enough, for the last 30-40 years, some people, those who are meditating, go into this kind of thing, and they explore into with their own commentaries, and conventional commentators are not happy with that, because they wanted to preserve something, but this interpretation behind the condition and unconditioned is not preserving something. It is bursting into the present moment, so therefore they will not be very conservative. They will be very radical. So inviting you, each of you, to be radical and to use your all the tools you have earned and be choicelessly be aware on the condition and unconditioned, then and there, you are the very person to understand the liberation. There's no certificates. There's no other person to come and inquire you or examine you. So if you feel it, the symptoms are less and less frustration, less and less tension. So with that remark, I would like to sum up the today's talk. Thank you very much for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.